Where's your data go after they pull the plug? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The private info of as many as 500,000 Google users was found to be hanging out there for potential hackers to see until the hole was plugged this spring. The Wall Street Journal has details of how Google did not disclose the security flaw when it was discovered, in part because it didn't want to further rile regulators. The software problem was related to the Google Plus social network, an unsuccessful rival to Facebook. Google now says it's getting rid of Google Plus. But what happens to your data when a platform unravels? Marketplace's Jed Kim reports on some vulnerabilities.
Google Plus was the mega tech giant's answer to Facebook. It was a bust. Peter Swire researches privacy and cybersecurity at Georgia Tech. He says products that dwindle away don't attract a company's top talent and attention.
When companies have apps that are no longer central to the business model, there's a general concern that they won't hold them to the highest standard. And that may have happened here.
It's not clear what security Google was giving the project. The company did not give an interview, but says it's not evident any user data was misused. Still, there are concerns about the ways companies handle personal data for systems they no longer support. Aviva Leighton is a security analyst at Gartner. She says IT cleanup?
It's not done as diligently as putting new systems online. It doesn't have the same level of attention.
News of the security loophole, which exposed information like names, jobs, email addresses, led the company to finally pull the plug on the consumer version. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
Google's parent company Alphabet separately announced that it's dropping out of the bidding on a $10 billion data project for the Department of Defense. The company says it's in part because the work might violate its ethical guidelines. Instead, Amazon could get the work for the Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure Cloud, acronym JEDI. All right, we've eaten up three quarters of 2018 here. Let's check the economic pulse. The International Monetary Fund's World Economic Outlook out today has data. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer got the assignment.
It appears the global pulse is slowing down. The IMF pegs global economic growth this year at 3.7%. That's down 0.2 percentage point from its last forecast. The IMF says trade tensions are a key threat and will disrupt global supply chains, making it harder for manufacturers to import parts they need. The IMF also says trade barriers will slow the spread of new technologies and will make consumer products more expensive. The IMF says that will lower low-income households' economic expectations. It says U.S. economic growth will slow from 2.9% this year to 2.5% in 2019. And it says China's growth will fall next year.
All right, Nancy, thank you, I think. Let's do the numbers. FTSE in London down 0.4%. Dow and S&P futures each down 0.5%. Bond market closed yesterday, opened today. The 10-year yield up at 3.25%. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota, wrote to say how much he enjoys our coverage of the economy and that Marketplace helps him make strong arguments and combat misinformation about financial matters. To join John in supporting trustworthy, objective journalism, donate online at marketplace.org. Thanks to all the Marketplace investors who make our work possible.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
You can jam in your earbuds. You can try to wall yourself in under your desk with banker's boxes. But how are you really supposed to handle it when people want to talk politics at work, especially in these divided days? Well, we work with Allison Green, who writes the popular Ask a Manager blog, where you can write to her or to us with your thorny workplace or management issues. Thanks for weighing in here, Allison.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
We talked to some people before the last presidential election who had lost clients because politics came up and they did not see eye to eye and people fired them. It's still going on. We have a very polarized America. Give us some advice here. I mean, what do you do if politics comes up at the office and you're the person who doesn't want to talk about it?
Yeah, it really is okay to set boundaries. If you don't want to talk politics at work, you can be direct about that. You can say, you know, we look at these issues pretty differently, and I'd rather keep politics out of our work relationship. And other people may actually be relieved that someone is setting that boundary.
But the presumption of your answer is that it can be acceptable to talk politics in some offices in certain situations.
If everyone involved is consenting to the conversation, that's fine. I would say you want to be aware of trapped bystanders who might not appreciate the conversation as well. That's a good way to drive your coworkers mad or just make it hard for them to concentrate. So you've got to be respectful about that.
It also, at some level, is a diversity issue, because if you have a monoculture, you hire only people who agree with the boss politically, that's going to cut out some talent.
I think that's a problem that I hear about from readers a lot, too, is that they're working in an office where their political views are very different from most people around them. But people are assuming that they agree, and they're drawing them into conversations, sort of making them feel complicit in viewpoints that they find pretty harmful or offensive.
Hard these days to pull this off. In recent days, the Supreme Court nomination hearings have been going on. And even if someone has resolved, I'm not going to talk about this at work, regardless of what side of that particular issue one is, you can imagine someone looking at the TV and saying, ugh, you know, one way or another. And it's a little hard to suppress all of one's reactions.
I think it can be useful to think about it from the other side. If your coworker were talking about a candidate all the time who you found, frankly, harmful, or had a big sign in their office promoting them, it might impact the way that you thought of that person. It might impact the relationship in subtle ways. And there's no reason that you need to inject that into your workplace. There are a lot of other times and places to use your voice in the political process, but work generally should not be one of them.
Ask a Manager. Allison Green is a work advice columnist. Allison, thank you.
Thank you.
And you heard there, it's not just speech. I asked about red Make America Great Again hats or My Body, My Choice shirts, and Allison's sense was not at work for reasons listed above. Sounds like companies should make it clear whatever the policy is. Our producers are Michael Lipkin, Katie Long, Daniel Shin. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.